from the twisted realm of science and the darkest pits of reason comes chilling tales of godlessness. Bear witness to the unfathomable terror that is the Good Atheist.
I don't get to choose the topics. I don't even get to choose the lighting conditions. We're right now, we are sitting in a dank, dark basement because Jake no likey the light.
Well, I'll tell you why I don't like the light. It's because every time the light comes over, like every time I feel like I'm reaching some degree of insight, the light just burns it out of my retinas. You know what I mean? Like it's harsh on the eyeballs. Mm. I'm so used to the garage, which has artificial light all day, that as soon as real sunlight comes in, I'm like, I'm becoming a vampire slowly.
Yeah, all of your dirty atheist ideas are germinating in the darkness.
Yeah, I can see why psychos like the darkness. It's easier to think crazy thoughts when you're in the dark. Show is partly crazy, so it makes completely sense.
So please tell me what we decided that we were going to do differently.
We talked about it yesterday. I don't know why you got to be like that. I was mentioning that the bonus show format shouldn't necessarily be constrained the same way that the regular show is, because it's the show for the patrons.
Yeah.
So I thought it would be an interesting thing to ask people to suggest topics that we could talk about. I mean, it's kind of the same way of saying, hey, what do you guys want us to talk about? I mean, you are paying for this the bonus show eventually.
Oh, yes, you're right. We did talk about this.
Yeah. Look at you, mister. You don't talk to me about nothing. Now we sound like a married couple.
Yeah, I apologize, Jake. Let's make up.
No, never. Not this time. You've done this for the last time. Okay, I picked four.
Do you want to talk a little bit more about the idea?
The process? Yeah.
Well, just the idea of, say, you know, don't think of it so much of as question thing.
Topics that people can just sort of suggest. So it's kind of like, hey, Jake, take a look at this. Or, you know, hey, can you guys talk about this issue going on in this part of the world, and so on and so forth? Because, I mean, most of the time, choosing topics to talk about is whatever's going to be on the site, whatever I've put my eyeball onto and sort of like paid any attention to. But it doesn't mean I always pay attention to absolutely everything. Mm. I mean, there's plenty of things that just totally escape my understanding.
Well, honestly, I mean, here's the whole thing: is let's try not to get stuck into an atheist news type format, because quite frankly, atheist nudes. I wouldn't be too unhappy if we got into an atheist nudes format where we had people send in atheist nudes of themselves and we would talk about them on the radio.
You know, talk about, you know, that whole thing, that coming out campaign, the Scarlet Letter thing that I don't like because that logo sucks ass.
The Scarlet A, like, yeah, the red atheist.
Yeah, the coming out thing. I'm like, fuck that. Show me your tits. That's what I think the best coming out thing is. I'm an atheist and I have boobs. Absolutely.
I like it too.
I'm going to wear that shirt.
I'm showing my boobs right now.
Please don't. No. He's doing it. Doing it. Oh, God. I looked at him. My eyes, they burn more than the sun.
It just seems unnatural when you tweak them, doesn't it?
Yeah. Oh, God. Okay. So here are a couple of subjects.
Long story short, email in your topics. We'll take care of it.
Yeah, exactly. Email them to me, jacobforte@gmail.com. And, you know, whatever you want us to talk about, we'll just jam. Okay, so I basically picked four of them because obviously the show can't last like 30 hours. So I picked the four of them that I thought would have the better discussions. Okay, the first one, you don't know about this. Well, I don't know if you did, but unreasonablefaith.com, that's a blog. I actually quite enjoy this blog. I think it's one of the better atheist blogs out there. Had noticed that one of his commenters was saying some pretty damn weird stuff. It was like this guy going on with a name like A Atheist or something like that. Anyways, he had different acronyms, but here's a couple quotes that he put on in the comment section. If a man wants to make a woman his bitch, so be it. So what if you don't like it? What if I do? The other thing he said is, if I want to do something and my conscience is cool with it, then I can do it. If I feed a homeless person, so be it. If I kill my neighbor, so be it. I'm not bound by any morals. Now, you know, the alarm bells immediately kind of went off, because obviously that's not a normal thing for any human being to say, regardless of their religion. So did a little bit of digging and found that the person was actually this pastor by the name of Chris Fox, his Baptist minister. And he was kind of exposed, you know. He confronted him.
So basically he got caught trolling a message board.
He got caught trolling a message board, so Daniel... That's the name of the guy who runs the site. Daniel Florian, I believe it's. Anyways, he, you know, tried to confront him about it. I don't think it was probably in a very, you know, harsh way. It's just like, what's up with that dog?
Yeah.
And the pastor, you know, sort of like admitted that he did it, but didn't think that there was anything wrong with it. You know, he just didn't figure that misleading anybody into what he really thought and trying to paint atheists as some kind of immoral baby eaters was wrong, you know?
The unfortunate thing about religion is it doesn't get updated, and there's no new commandment that says, thou shalt not troll. Which really, if there was a moral and righteous God, that would be in there. Because, man, internet trolls suck.
They do suck. Actually, it's funny, because speaking about trolls, Feringula thought that the P.Z. Myers guy, the biologist, atheist site, he thought it'd be neat to offer a challenge to trollers. He's saying, like, well, I could ban you, or I could ask you to sort of, like, make a reasonable argument. You're just not allowed to quote scripture, you know? Come up with a reasonable argument, and that's fine. Mm-hmm. You know, it's almost like, I mean, I had a few of these people myself, so they'd go on, and they'd just post page after fucking page of Psalms, you know? Just like, bam, 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 yeah, I'm right. And you're just like, could you stop quoting the Psalms? You're like, what are you doing? Like, you're just cutting and pasting here. This is not an argument. How can I argue with literature? Like, it doesn't make your point, you know. It's all in the same book. If you post that much, literally, it might be a copyright issue if the damn thing was copyrighted. Anyways, so he thought he was being, like, it would be a clever idea, but I don't think it does anything beyond just, you know, encourage more trollers to come on and say, like, I'm just going to put more quotes.
Well, what I find really amusing about this whole thing is how this guy basically came out, and he's trying to be an atheist. He's trying to put his head into the mindset of an atheist, and that the post that he wrote, it's kind of like, you know, all those white kids that go out on Halloween dressed as pimps, and they think that they know what dressing like a pimp and being like, yo, I'm a pimp, and it's all over the top and ridiculous.
Oh, yeah. It's like guys who have those shirts, you know, or the thing being like, it's hard being a pimp, and I'm totally pimp.
Yeah.
And pimp has now come to mean sort of like something good. Pimps are horrible people, okay? They're not, don't ever call yourself a pimp. Don't dress like a pimp.
But it's just that same ignorance where you're just like, oh.
I don't get it. Oh, dude, I'm doing something right.
So you go out there and you do the big wig and the funny coat and the cane, and it's like, that's not what pimps are like at all. And it's like, that's not what atheists are like at all. So it's very amusing to see this person kind of come out and be, you know, a 40-year-old virgin. Oh, I love breasts.
Oh, it's like bags of sand. Bags of sand.
It's like, congratulations. You have no idea. And that's really the sad thing about it. And this is why, to me, like, this is the argument that I want to fight. Because remember when we were down in Cincinnati that time, we were sitting with our friend Iggy. Iggy was asking us that question very sincerely, is, without God, where do you get your morals? and I think a lot of people think the same way, that without God, there's no way of being moral. And so I think that we have to do a better job of kind of trying to identify the morality outside of a religious connotation.
Well, there's only so much that, say, we as atheists can do. I think ultimately the question's not being answered, you know, in general by philosophers, because a lot of people think that the question has been answered already. What can you do to develop a strong moral system? And they're like, well, we already have one, so it's all good. And it must be religion if we have one.
But yeah, this is my problem with it, though, is that the idea of atheist morality, we only talk about moral issues when they bang up against the shores of nut job Christian or
right-wingery.
Or any kind of hardcore fundamental religious opinions. And just to me, I think that we could talk about a whole bunch of moral issues that are outside of even the scope of religion and just say this is the moral thing to do that a rational, skeptical individual should probably follow. And here's why, you know?
I've been
like,
thinking
why
about...
is it, if we went outside of the realm of just talking, this religious morality is wrong, and started just talking about a general, non-theotic...
Non-theotic.
I like theotic.
Okay, all right. We'll stick with theotic. It's quicker to say. Actually, you know what? I
like theotic because it kind of sounds like moronic.
It is. It is both.
Wait, move away from that and get into a more encapsulating idea of morality and really push the idea of an atheist guide to morality.
I don't think you need to define it along terms along any religious terms whatsoever. Even to mention it as sort of an atheistic philosophy would hinder the possibility of you developing a very appropriate moral standpoint, like a guide. I have a very basic guide, the way that I look at it. I said, if you want to look at human behavior and try to determine what makes a person behave properly and what makes a person behave improperly, take a look at the issue of theft. Now, if you needed to steal because you were poor, like you are now forced to steal, and the reason I want to put you in that kind of moral position is because an issue doesn't become an issue unless you're faced with it. You know, stealing is wrong. Well, what if you now need to steal? How wrong does stealing become? If you have two options, one is to steal your bread from a grocer, and the other is to steal your bread from your equally poor neighbor who, you know, spent his last dime on a loaf of bread. How would you quantify those two acts? Because the way we see and we understand it intuitively is they're very different. At the core, they're very different because we're able to empathize with a person who's at home, who has only one loaf, and who does not want someone breaking into his house and stealing the only food sustenance that he has.
Yeah, but I mean, there's a pretty obvious difference between a person who has one loaf of bread in a grocery store, which is loaded with delicious loaves of bread.
Okay, but why is that different in your mind? Because if morality is based, again, on sort of like something as simple as a commandment, then the rule should be the same. Stone these people to death.
My morality is all based on, we've mentioned this very briefly before, but I feel like expounding on it today, is the don't be a dick theory of morality.
Forget the golden rule. It's the don't be a dick.
Yeah, don't be a dick. And stealing a loaf of bread from a grocery store where God knows most of it will probably go bad anyways is obviously a lot less dickish than stealing a loaf of bread from an equal poor person who might not have the stones to go and rip off a grocery store.
All right, but I want to press your sort of like philosophy just a little bit, because I want you to define what being a dick is.
It's on a case-by-case basis. Why do you think people ask, what would Jesus do in every situation? My what would Jesus do is, don't be a dick. So if I'm confronted by an issue, I'm like, what is the way for me to be the least amount of a dick? Unless you have to be a dick, because you sometimes do have to be a dick.
I shudder to think that you have done nothing to answer my question. You've gotten fucking a whole minute without answering. What I'm basically asking you is, do you think that there is a ubiquitous quality that is something called dickishness that everybody can kind of agree on?
No, it's a personal philosophy.
So is there any correlation between another person's sort of concept of dickishness? Like, is there any correlation? Because I'm afraid that if there isn't, your philosophy stinks. Because, okay, here's what I'm saying. Well, again, to go back to my point. Is to say that you have a very intuitive way of understanding what is a dick, right? But that's just sort of like you anthropomorphizing certain qualities into a persona. You know, saying, well, a person who goes around and doesn't care, arbitrarily steals from a poor individual as they would from a rich, is a dick. And he's a dick because he doesn't care. He does not empathize with the people that he steals from. Because if you're trying to empathize with a person that runs a grocery store or the person who's at home and who only has that loaf, you can understand why stealing would be so wrong in one case and not in the other. It's just because you're putting yourself in that position, the shoes of someone else. Like, that's the easiest way to have that, you know, a very simple moral guide. You already possess it. It wasn't thought up of by anybody other than your instinctive brain. It's like, why do you think that we're naturally social creatures? Erase every single law, and the same type of behavior would still, you know, be noticeable. You can see it all the time. I mean, look at kids, the way they even behave. They have codes. They have conduct. None of these are rules that adults made about how kids should interact. They just interact naturally because they have... Once they begin to empathize with others, they understand certain rules, and then they don't go beyond those boundaries. And they even police themselves.
I feel like you're trying to work the word empathy into this as much as possible. Are you trying to tell me something, Jacob?
No, I'm just trying to say that what you describe as being a dick is a persona of lacking empathy.
I will agree that in order to follow don't be a dick for it to be a successful mantra, you definitely have to have a very pretty solid and reasonable opinion on what being a dick constitutes.
Well, I was trying to help your philosophy.
But I mean, here's what I'm trying to say is, if you have a whole bunch of religious people that base their morality on text and you're trying to tell them, get rid of God, he's useless, and come over here. We obviously have to kind of spell things out. And it's not like it doesn't already exist. There are tons of books on morality and everything else like that no one's really bothered to pay attention to. So why don't we just bring it out there and we say, well, I mean, here's the code. Here's the ethical boundaries that we've decided are acceptable right now. And as things go along, we're going to continue to judge them. That's why talking about morality is so much fun. It's because there's always new stuff to talk about. You know, what about the morality of the guys with AIG and their bonuses and everything else like that? Mm-hmm. What about the morality of Congress that's trying to strip away the money that they're going to be making? What about the morality of this and that? There's all sorts of examples and conversations that we could have. We could have a whole other podcast. It's the morality
moral show, the good moralist.
Yep. And rather than basing it on this person's doing this and it's based on their religious beliefs and we think that's stupid, you know, widen that conversation and say we want to talk about morality in general, because I think that a lot of people stick with their Christian ideals or their Muslim ideals because they feel that it is a big part of who they are through their morality and their moral code and their moral fiber.
I can understand why a person would be really distraught if they thought that code was going to suddenly disappear.
Well, this is why, obviously, like, you have all the craziness in Europe is because everybody in Europe thinks that everybody immigrating in are changing the moral code of the country.
Well, they change it to some degree. Considering the UK, where the National Health Service had to offer free female circumcision reversals to women, because although the practice is illegal there, I mean, there are over 500 women that get, you know, the procedure, quote, end quote. And really, they had only two options. I mean, one was to try to prosecute as harshly as they could, but it's not likely to happen, and not even one person has ever been prosecuted for it.
Ugh.
Or they can try to sort of, like, deal with the situation, contain it, and at least try to promote health in these young women. But it doesn't change the fact that the conversation in that country about female circumcision needs to be going on right now, because it's being decided for you. You know, like, what you consider to be legal and illegal doesn't matter to certain cultures who now say, well, that's part of our religious practice, so we need to be allowed to do that.
Yep.
And you're saying no. You're saying we need a universal code of conduct, and you're coming in, you're fucking things up.
Oh, are you saying, like, that's a bad idea?
Well, no. I'm saying that...
That it's not easy.
It's not an easy thing. I mean...
No, that's okay. It's not easy.
It forces you to make some very unpopular decisions. Like, for instance, I mean, I hate to give any credence to what a conservative says, but their stance is always, well, when in Rome, you know, you must be a Roman.
Mm-hmm.
And to some degree, we've always thought that that's not necessary, that a person can really bring their culture with them and can be adapted. But the truth is that not every element of a culture can be. And when that conflicts with sort of your morality, then a discussion needs to happen. You may find out that your stance wasn't moral to begin with, like to say, oh, well, there's this dress code and everybody has to dress the same. Well, maybe that's not moral. Maybe that's just stupid.
We've talked about the fact that we're probably going to be on the wrong side of, or asked ourselves, are we going to be on the wrong side of any moral questions down the road?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the one thing that I could figure definitely would be sort of a very speciesist, human-centered attitude that maybe hopefully in the future will change.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll look, oh, what an archaic guy. I thought the human race was so great.
I can't believe they ate chicken nuggets. That is the height of it. It would be worse. No, I'm not going to say that.
No,
we're not
going to
have two horrible things.
No. You've been on a saying horrible things kind of a trend
lately. I apologize to everyone who's listening.
You know what I think it is? Mm-hmm. I think it's in our other work, at fightlinker.com,
mm-hmm.
You're used to ragging on people, but the news has slowed down, so your acerbic nature has not been tempered.
I've had to turn it up a notch in order to keep people, you know, people aren't watching me tap dance for coins anymore. I got to whip out my thing and be like, blah, blah, blah.
Every once in a while, you will be arrested by the police for exposure, and it may spill over to other shows.
Mm-hmm.
So try not to bring all of the horrible things in your mind. And,
I apologize, people, but let's just say it would be really... It's going to be considered really bad probably down the line what we did to all those chickens.
All those delicious, delicious chicken.
Indeed.
I'll be remembered in time and be like, that guy, wise, but he ate chicken. No!
Yeah.
My legacy tarnished.
Can I really vote for a man who ate chicken nuggets? There's pictures of him.
Look at him. He's got like a barbecue sauce all over his mouth. He's an animal! It's a Holocaust on his plate. It's horrible.
Yep.
Okay, new subject. This one's from, they're kind of interrelated, so I kind of grouped them together, from Joe and Swedish Guy. These are their
Oh, who asked that question?
That was Katie. I forgot to mention. Nice. Thank you, Katie, for that question. Keep them coming. Mm. Okay, now for Joe and Swedish guy. Joe asks, what do you think it is? Okay, I'm not even going to read the sentence because it doesn't make sense. Just read as is. But it's saying, Swedish guy asks, what do you think? Why do you think atheism is so heavily coupled with science? Basically, is what he's asking. Mm. Because he, I don't know if he accused me, but he said, well, you seem to be talking less atheism and more science. And I'm like, the two are really related to some degree, because my position about God is a scientific kind of, it's a scientific position. It says basically, well, if you, any extraordinary claims need extraordinary evidence. I believe in sort of like the principle of skepticism of that you find things about the natural world through experimentation and observation and building models.
The truth of the matter is that atheism is a position that basically exists to counter religion. So, I mean, if we're not talking specifically about religion, then we have to kind of talk about other things that lots of atheists are interested in, and that's the idea of morals, skepticism, science, things like this. So, I mean, I've already voiced my opinion that I'm sick and tired of the atheist agenda being all about shitting on religion, because I think there's so much more than that. And I think that, with science, I mean, if you're going to be a good atheist, which we like to think people are going to want to be good
atheists.
They're
going to want it.
Because of the website, the good atheist.
Yeah.
But if you want to be a good atheist, you have to kind of understand why atheism
is a better position.
Is a better position than, say, religion. Because if you're not willing to take that, you know, to at least understand the fundamentals, then you're basing your beliefs on faith just as much as, say, a religious person is.
Yeah, well, I mentioned last article that I wrote, does it take faith to be an atheist? I mentioned the fact that people develop worldviews based on they trust certain institutions, certain groups, certain ideas to be true. I mean, if a scientist tomorrow tells you that a particular product is cancerous, you're likely to believe him because he's a scientist,
well,
and
actually,
you make assumptions. Hold on.
Not anymore.
Okay, but let me.
They've overdone it.
Well, they've not only overdone it, but we also, you know, the amount of trust that we'd have in these kind of studies has, and I think this is a good thing, has been
diminished,
and it's, and you shouldn't automatically trust it just because a scientist says it. But with that said, anything that you hear from a scientist or anybody that engages in the scientific method, when they make a claim, it's something that you yourself can test. All right, the notion that the Earth is round can be tested. You can go out and find out if that's true, and there's plenty of ways for you to do so. You don't have to take somebody's word for it. You don't even need to take a, look at a picture. You can find that out yourself. Just take a measurement of a shadow in two different cities at the exact same time and the exact same day, and you will find that out. That's how Eurysthenes, I can't even pronounce it right. Anyways, Eurysthenes, ancient Greek philosopher, that's how he found the circumference of the Earth. He was off by about 1%. And just by doing that, just a simple measurement of two different cities, and he was able to calculate that the reason why one shadow was shorter and one was longer was because the Earth was curved. How wonderful! You can go outside, you can find that out for yourself, and that's kind of like I think a wonderful thing. But if a person tells you that Jesus died on the cross and you got to take some book's word for it, and there's no evidence to suggest that any story like that existed or that any of the miracles that people performed were true, why would you believe them? Why would you have any trust in that? It doesn't make any sense. I mean, just like Ryan was trying to say, if you don't have it, if you haven't tested at least some of the assertions that are made by science, like really tested them, then you don't really know it.
Well, the big problem with religion as well is that so many times when you try and test things or try and bring them into the real world, it's such an epic bitch slap of reality saying no.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, how many...
No, they don't say no. They say, whoa, that's too much information. You don't want to ask that.
Well, I mean, even just... I'm talking about going out and taking things and... let's take a look at all of the times that religion and science have butted heads. When's the last time religion won?
If you want to win, you can win in the court of public opinion, but that's about it.
Because I'm not going to lie and say that a lot of what I believe about science and about the universe isn't based on faith, but it's not some faith in an invisible God. It's a faith in certain people, certain scientists, certain research that I've looked into, and I've come to the conclusion that this sounds reasonable, and I've looked into it to a certain degree to at least be able to decide that, okay, I can put my faith into this until such evidence comes up that would make me think twice.
Well, this is the ironic thing about the way that faith is now described, because faith is described now as belief despite evidence to the contrary. And, you know, we use faith in phrase. The way that we phrase it is just to say, well, this is an assertion that I can make with a profound knowledge of the subject. I have faith that these two people will get back together. I mean, you wouldn't say that unless you knew that that was really a possibility. But for religious people, it means completely the opposite. It's mean you need to hold on to this belief no matter how hard evidence comes up to suggest that it is false.
So do you think they've basically perverted the concept of faith the same way, say, they perverted the concept of a theory?
They've done more than perverted. They have co-opted. They've stolen that word. And now every time that word's used, I mean, it's used against us by saying, well, you guys have faith in atheism. So, you know, it's the same as faith in religion. You know, you're like, you fool! Stop throwing around that word because you don't know what it means. You have a different interpretation of that word. The way that I interpret it, I could say, yes, I do, but you don't understand what I mean when I say that. It means something completely different to you. So that's why we have to stop using that word, really, you know? And that's why I say trust rather than faith, because faith is trust. But at least with trust, there is no, there's none of that fogginess. You know exactly what trust is. You know who you trust because these individuals are trustworthy. You know them, so you know that you trust them. So that's the best word that I fucking can come up with, because every time I use faith, I get nervous. I know exactly what kind of reaction I'm going to get by just using that word. Okay, Joe asked, which is the related question, says, how is life for an average Canadian atheist?
Pretty sweet.
It's pretty damn sweet, actually. I gotta be honest with you. I mean, even when in the conversation comes up, I find that most people who are about it, even if they believe, everybody's really nice and civil about it. You know, there's, I haven't been in a lot of fights, concerning faith. A couple dates maybe that went wrong. You know, when I started talking that, and when I first started dating, that was a bad move.
That was a very dumb. I don't but talking about religion on a date.
Well, listen. Listen, I wasn't always good with women. I used to be terrible.
Talk about their beautiful breasts or how you want to have sex with
them.
Yeah,
absolutely.
That's what you want to talk about.
Yeah,
you're
saying like, oh, wow, your breasts are huge. I totally want to bang you.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I totally want to bang you.
Don't be like, nice rack. Do you believe in God?
No.
Fail.
No, exactly. You got to tell them right away. As soon as you feel it, you got to tell them you want to bang them. They really find that that's a compliment.
Now,
that's
I usually ask, do you believe in God? And if they say yes, I'm like, God wanted us to be together.
Oh, no. You know what you ask? I said, do you believe in God? She says yes. I'm like, finally, I am complete. Actually, I'll tell you one thing about being a Canadian atheist that disturbed me. Now, again, this has to do with my trust in science and why I consider science to be very important, mm-hmm. and why I'm very pissed that Science Minister Gary, what's his name? Goodyear, like the tire. I don't know why I forgot that. But Gary Goodyear has no real understanding of evolution, lied when he said that he believed in it. He lied. Look, let me tell you something, okay? That man does not fucking believe in evolution. Any type of person asks you and your response is, well, that's a private thing, I don't need to tell you. It's like asking, do you believe in gravity? And another person replies, that's a private matter, thank you very much.
Like, you have herpes, I plead the fifth.
And then finally, a couple of days later, comes out and says, oh yeah, I believe in evolution. I mean, did you hear some of the quotes that I was saying?
Yeah, he basically made a big caveat where he claimed that evolution was something that it basically
was
not.
Yeah, basically he
again, it was, oh, I love the feel of tits. They're like
bags
of sand.
Yeah, absolutely. You know what it is. You know what it is. And I actually have
maybe
he
took his notes from that form guy, from the form troll.
Yeah, he had to. But the thing that angered me, well, it didn't anger me, but I thought it was amusing. One of the fans of the site kind of commented saying, well, I think you're being kind of harsh on him. You know, he said he believed in evolution, so it should be all good. And I'm like, it's not all good. He's a faker. Not only is he a faker, but this is a science minister, okay? It's not some jackass high school teacher who still, you know, reads the biology textbook every once in a while after class. He says, okay, kids, and remember that none of that is real. You know what I mean? That would be annoying. But he is a science minister. The science minister.
We have Canada.
Of Canada. Of an entire country.
I know that Americans might have gotten used to like 8 years of idiots running everything.
Yeah. But we can't deal with that shit around here. We lose our wig. Well, we don't wear wigs anymore, but I think they still do.
They still do in court.
Oh my God.
It is absolutely ridiculous.
Why do they still wear those wigs in court?
I don't know. It's not a religious thing, but it is still amazingly dumb. Why do teenage girls at private schools still wear short skirts? I'm like, you figure they would have fucking adjusted with the time once they realized it turned into like a big sex thing.
I know. I don't even understand why they never changed the uniforms. I mean, they thought, well, it's a tradition. Good on you, I guess. I mean, it's the reason why it'll continue to be hot. I mean, I suppose if they switched their uniforms over to gray pants, those would become the new thing. So maybe they just realized you can't fight it.
No. The reason those skirts are sexy is because they're sexy. The end. There's not some kind of like, oh, it's a school. It's just that is a hot skirt. It is a hot plaid skirt, and that's all there is to it. So it is completely.
You keep dreaming that they're not even wearing any panties. You keep dreaming about it.
Well, those are high school girls, Jacob.
My God. I want to go in a time machine. Go back in time. I want to talk to my 12-year-old self and say, buddy, you need to start getting good at hitting on women.
Better marks, get into those private schools.
Yeah, exactly. Private schools, man. Okay, let's talk about a different subject. This one's pretty damn... This one will harsh your mellow. It's from Simon, who wanted us to talk about the dude Joseph Fritzl, who was the Austrian man who locked up his daughter for 24 years.
Had children with her.
He has recently been sentenced to life for that crime. Well, it's two crimes, really. Other than the locking up and raping, there was also the fact that one of a child, a very young child, died, and he incinerated it and then buried it. So there was that part.
Wow.
You know? Yeah. Great guy.
Well,
great
here's guy. The thing. I'm really wondering how many. There's got to be lots of cases like this going on, man. I mean, there's statistics out there or assumptions based on how. Whenever you hear about a kid going missing or something like that, and you always wonder what happened to that person. And sure, a lot of them are buried out in the woods, but I'm pretty sure there are a lot of like cellars in America that are full of situations like this, and it's very, very creepy indeed.
Well, I mean, I don't know if you know all the details, but get this: he had asked for a building permit to make adjustments to the basement, and the inspectors actually came in. This was in 1983, before he brought her down and locked her in there. And the specifications seemed all right. The inspectors came over, they looked at it. But he had made a fake wall behind that, which had then a corridor that led to basically a number of rooms that he had made, like a bathroom. It's just like a tiny little apartment with no light in it. And basically...
Perfect for you.
Yeah, perfect for me, yeah. I wish he would kidnap me. Yeah, and then on, what was it, August 9th, 1984, he lures her down to the basement, saying, like, I need your help to carry down a door.
So it's not really luring, it's just like, hey, daughter, come down.
Yeah, exactly. Then like drugs her with ether, and then that's her prison for 24 years. Now, a couple other fucked up things that I don't know if you knew. She had there was an 18-year-old kid who was in there, like a boy.
Yeah.
And he was 170 centimeters tall, but the room was 163, I think. So his entire fucking life, up until 18 years of age, he could never stand up straight, ever. I mean, he can't do any physical labor. I mean, all the kids, everybody who was involved is still in therapy. They have regular freakouts, you know, like a person turns off a light or they're not and they can't even look at the light. I mean, they are hypersensitive to the sun. All right, they're like vampires with vitamin D deficiency and anemia. Like, it's crazy when you think about those details. I mean, he raped her probably an estimated 3,000 times. 3,000. And the fact is, okay, get this, another interesting points. They had rented a room to somebody who wasn't part of the family, and he had complained that he had heard some weird noises, but he was able to be convinced that it was just kind of like weird cellar noises. And that was another way that he convinced other people around him that everything was fine. Also, three of the kids that were, you know, sort of like downstairs that had been born, because he had seven in total with this woman.
Yeah.
Three of them he brought back up, and he had convinced the child services that the daughter, who had apparently run away, according to him,
yeah.
had left these kids.
Drops by,
and they had accepted his story. They're like, okay, that makes sense. The wife, I mean, doesn't even know, never knew. I mean, not even a fucking clue. 24 years. You know, she just assumed, well, he goes down to the basement. Sometimes he wouldn't even come back up. He'd spend the entire night there. And she thought nothing of it, man. While he lived this other creepy, horrible family life where he's molesting these kids, you know, even his own kids.
I mean, these oversights happen all the time. Who was it? Which serial killer was it that had his naked boy slave with a hole drilled in his
Jeffrey
head?
Jeffrey Dahmer.
Yeah,
his Puerto Rican or something like that. I don't know. Puerto Rican, Latino lover, quote unquote,
yeah.
or kidnap victim, runs out naked and he's drugged, so he can't talk. Cops talk to him, but, you know, obviously he's not making any sense. Jeffrey Dahmer comes over, calms the situation down, says that it's his boyfriend, but he's just, you know, obviously high on some kind of drug. So the police are like, okay, fine. I mean, they don't even arrest these dudes.
So things like this happen all the time. You know?
Yeah, you can't be surprised. You know what it reminds me of? That scene in Misery, you know? Cop comes over, finally figures everything out, gets killed.
Run over by a lawnmower.
Yep.
Yeah, so that's one of those cases where, you know, when people say be vigilant, it's like, just be aware.
Be aware
aware of your surroundings, please.
Oh, for God's sakes, man. It's just, it's creepy. I mean, I have to think about the fritzels out there that haven't been caught. And you know it's not, you know there's probably not many. But, you know, two or three is enough.
I'm still afraid that there's probably more. I mean, statistically speaking, there's probably a pretty good deal of people like that, you know? But, I mean, what can you do? Now, before, just as a, actually, I guess this doesn't really lighten the mood, but I found it amusing. Did you hear about, that guy that got arrested with a promotional shirt for Kirk Cameron's latest film, Fireproof?
No.
Oh, this is, I don't know if people will find it amusing.
Okay, well, it's your story, so let's run with it. What's the story?
Guy got arrested for strangling his wife.
Oh, man.
I know, but he was wearing a promotional shirt from Fireproof, and the promotional shirt says, I love my marriage. But,
wow.
Yeah.
Why did he wear that shirt?
Oh, it's a free shirt.
I guess so, eh? Well, you know what? I don't usually, every time I get a free shirt, I don't really read it or mean what the shirt says. Like, for instance, I have a Jesus Patrol shirt. I mean, that's deliciously ironic as well.
Yep.
Yeah, I guess that's kind of also darkly ironic. I love my marriage so much that I strangled my wife.
Yeah. Anyways, wow. I thought I'd share that. I'll send you the link. You can post it up on the site.
That does seem too amusing not to post. one thing that I did want to mention, back to the Fritzl thing, and what I want to ask you is, how do you think a guy like that justifies what he's doing? Because I have this idea, this theory that every human being, regardless of what act of terror or violence they cause, seeks to justify their actions, you know, at least to themselves, to make them believe that, oh, I'm a good person, I'm not doing anything wrong.
There's a lot of self-loathing people who recognize that that the things that they're doing are wrong, and they hate it, yet they can't stop. So I think that that's a completely different... I know that there's lots of people who are in denial, and they try and justify everything. But, you know, it's like those murderers in the movies that want to get caught. It's like he's leaving us these hints because he wants to be captured. And I think there's a split. There's the people that obviously try to justify all the doggish behavior that they engage in, or like the completely homicidal, crazy psychopath behavior. But I think there's an equal amount of people who are just eaten up inside, and, you know, these are the people that end up killing themselves because they hate themselves so much.
Well, I think it's a shame, too, that, you know, for the most part, Fritzl tried to do the whole insanity plea thing, or was hinting at it.
You didn't buy the insanity plea? You just think
I don't know.
Evil...
Well, here's the thing. Because he tried to play that card, it's impossible to know if that was a real factor in it. Because it would be more interesting to find out what makes a human being that shitty. You know, is it partly sort of like that relationship? How big of a role does that play? You know,
it's a control thing. I mean, people just they have the ability to do horrible things. I mean, that's what molestation, or as you like to call it nowadays, child rape, is all about. It's like the parent is in a position where they can do it and they can get away with it.
Well, so I mean, take a common example of a lot of these, you know, child predators were victims of predators themselves. You know, that's a common link, and you're all of a sudden you're like, why? And my biggest question is there anybody that knows the answer? And maybe the answer is something that really is frightening, you know, where we have to consider the fact that, you know, the very same people that are committing horrible things are what we would have previously seen as victims. You know, that's the kind of gut-wrenching shit that you feel. You're like, well, he was a victim, but all of a sudden you have to admit there is a point where a person stops being a victim, and obviously is the victimizer. You know, yeah. The person who creates more victims.
Hey, welcome to the 1990s legal system, where all of a sudden that started happening, and they were like, oh no, we have to start treating these people with empathy because they usually had some pretty horrific lives of themselves. But, I mean, it's that whole argument where there's people who have had horrible lives that grow up to be great people, and then there are ones who grow up to be pieces of shit.
But obviously how we deal with them always plays, again, to that whole thing that I was mentioning at the beginning about how we measure morality is the person who commits a fucking violent act but who otherwise had a regular childhood, and the person who does the same but who had a fucked up childhood, you will view these things differently. You know, at the end of the day, you're still mad at what happened.
Yeah.
But you have some degree of hope left in you saying, well, there isn't something naturally evil. You do have to corrupt a human being. And sometimes I think that that's what we need to hear, even if it's true or not. I think we all want to believe that human beings, given the right opportunities, will do the right things.
I
don't think that's the case at all, to be honest.
I don't deny the fact that people can be corrupted, but I think that all sorts of different things can corrupt people. You know, some people get corrupted because they were molested as kids. Some people get corrupted because they were spoiled. Little spoiled brats. So, I mean, to try and pin it down to this or that, life is hard for everybody. It's harder for a lot of people than what we have, but, you know, it doesn't...
It's hard, confusing, and it can be extremely painful. Yay! What a great way to finish the show. You have anything that can kind of bring us back from this despair?
Okay, you know that Kirk Cameron movie?
Yeah.
Fireproof?
Yeah.
Well, there was a guy, and he was married.
Wait, you already said that one.
Oh,
damn!
See, I thought
for the end.
I thought it was the end. I wanted to get in before you were, like, wrapping it up. So, you brought us back down. You saved this puppy. You landed in the river, hero.
Okay, I'll say something that's encouraging. The most encouraging thing that I can find. It's spring today! It's spring today! Spring. Happy spring. Merry spring.